Hi, everybody. Welcome to the January 24th, 2019 Houston Cluttered Coaching Meetup Group. My name is Gail Goddard. I'm the Clutter Fairy in Houston, Texas. Thanks so much for coming to listen to me talk today. Say hi, everybody.
Hi.
Thank you. Funny. Today, we are going to talk about dealing with crises in your life and how to help somebody pick up your affairs and help you if you are injured or hurt, if you pass away, who's going to pick up your affairs and manage them. And we don't want them to have to go into your clutter chaos and try to find all the data that they need in order to function. So we're going to talk about helping others help you in this situation and how to make that happen. So I've had this conversation before. In 2013, a friend of mine died after a short illness, and she died a lot quicker than we thought she would. And so it was a very unexpected turn of events, and we were completely unprepared to cope with that. And so that process sort of taught me a bunch of lessons. And at the time, we did a meetup group about it, and I made a checklist. And then last week, another friend of mine passed away, and I found myself remembering and reminiscing about the list. And so I wanted to go back and talk about that checklist and go through the pieces and explore the kinds of data and why you need to have that stuff available for people, and hopefully get you ready so that if something goes on, like you break your foot, somebody can handle your business. My stepmother actually was in an accident several years ago. She was riding a bike with a helmet, and she went over the, you know, typically you go over the handlebars and crack your head on the concrete. And she was unconscious for a few days. And then she was a long time recovering. She had a brain injury, and it took a while for her to get back to herself. And so as a result, my father, who had not been paying the bills or handling any of the money, suddenly was the guy that had to get the electric bill paid, and he didn't know what to do. And he generally knew that there were some passwords in a spreadsheet somewhere, but that's about as far as his data and information went about how to cope. And so that was another example of, you may be in a situation someday where suddenly somebody needs to make sure the electricity doesn't get turned off in your apartment, and they need to drive you to the doctor because you can't drive yourself, and they gotta, you know, pay your bills for a while because you're in the hospital recuperating, and maybe you have chemo brain and you can't think. You know, you hear people talk about chemo brain. Well, that's part of the treatment. You take all those horrible chemicals, and then your brain doesn't work right for a while. Like, it's a little foggy and difficult to think. And so there will be circumstances in your life where people need to come and support you, and the friends and family that love you are going to want to come and do that, and we want that to be easy for them. So let's talk about the kinds of data that they're going to need to know. One of the things that I needed to know when Susan passed away was, what are the names of her siblings or other family members, and where was the contact information? So I knew that she had siblings that were living, and one of them in Houston and the other ones were out of state, but I didn't have phone numbers for them. I wasn't in contact with her siblings. Like, how many people are you friends with that you know they have family, but you don't know anything about them, right? So if something were to happen, how would they scramble around and figure out how to contact your brother or sister, your mother or father, and tell them what was going on? What are their families, what are your siblings' parents' names, what's their contact data? One of the things you have to have when you, this is specific to if you were to pass away, one of the things you have to supply on the death certificate is they ask you things like, what's your parents' names, what's your mother's maiden name, what's your place of birth, and your date of birth. Well, I kind of know the day of my friends' birthdays, but I couldn't tell you what year it was unless it was somebody, you know, maybe one out of my 20 close friends. I would be able to say, yeah, I generally know what year you were born, but would I feel comfortable telling somebody to write it on an official document? Probably not. So that's the kind of data that the person who is ill or who has passed away has that data in their head, and it needs to be written down for you. So that's a piece of data to supply to one of your friends. Do you have a driver's license number? So one of the things I had to handle was, I had to handle the transfer of the car. So when she was gone, there was a vehicle, and I had to transfer the title from her to someone else. And of course, she didn't sign the title, and so there was stuff to be done with the title. So in order to go and have her car looked up, and you know, I needed her driver's license number, which I managed to find. But how much easier if it's on a list somewhere so that you can go, oh, driver's license number, boom, and pull it up real quickly. Social security number, everybody has to have your social security number. So some of the feedback that I get about this list is, this is all really important data that is super private and, you know, identity theft worthy, and we don't want everybody to have that. And I totally get it. And so I think there's some ways around that. Social Security, you know, they have to have your whole Social Security number do all sorts of things for you after you're gone, or, you know, filling out paperwork while you're in the hospital, or arranging hospice when you're coming home, or anybody that's got to do something for you is going to have all these numbers. So one of the things you can do is take all this data in a written form or a document and take it to an attorney and give it to the attorney to keep safe, and then give your friend the attorney's name and say, if there's a problem, go to this attorney and get the data that you need, right? Or here's a safety deposit key, and I'm gonna go put it in the safety deposit box. And then if I need help, then you can take my power of attorney and my key to my safety deposit box and go get the data out of it at that time. So you don't have to give it to people that you don't want them to have it while you're still, you know, functioning and happy. But you can give them a path to get the data and still keep it behind a firewall. You understand what I'm saying? Yeah. I know people. It makes people nervous because this is like the list of identity theft data in it right here. And so making it safe for you so you're comfortable, but they still have quick access to it, is really important. My mother, when she moved to North Carolina, took her will to a North Carolina attorney to put North Carolina witnesses on it to make the will from Texas valid in North Carolina. And then she put that business card in a file, and we just never, like, she never told me where the will was. We didn't know anything about it. And we were just flipping through stuff, looking for the will, and we found this attorney's business card stuck in a folder. Like, well, let's call this guy. Let's see if this is the guy. And that turned out to be the truth. That's where we found the will. But none of us had a clue, and we would not have had a clue that there was even one available if we hadn't accidentally run into the car. So this is one of those things where it's like, yeah, if you pass away, somebody needs to be able to get their hands on your will. And maybe you don't want that public data. Maybe you want that with an attorney or in a safety deposit box because you don't want anybody to know what it says until. But, you know, you still got to have that data, and they got to have a path to it, right? Okay, so here's a funny one. One of them is, you need to tell them where a location of the spare house keys and spare car keys are. And I just had to do this because at Christmas time, I went out of town, and I had to drive my car to Ed's house and park it so that Ed could take me to the airport. And I got all my bags out of the car, and I got into their car, and I'm talking la 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 la, and I don't notice, and they drive me to the airport. And I see you later, they drive away. I go down, I get all the way through security and down to my gate, and we're 15 minutes before boarding, and I look down and I don't have my computer bag with my computer in it. I'm like, oh hell, I've left the computer somewhere. I had left the computer in the car, locked in my car, where you could see it, parked in a parking garage, and I was gonna be gone for 2 weeks. Okay, so that's a recipe for getting broken into, is leaving your computer bag in the window of the car and let it be still for 2 weeks so that people can just look for it. So, I panic. I'm calling, you know, Ed, blah, blah, blah. We're having this conversation. It was like, there's no way that we can interact and me not miss my plane. And, of course, I had my house keys and car keys in my purse with me at the gate where they're completely useless, right? So I had, you know, it was like, okay, well, we'll figure out another way. There was a cat sitter, you know, we were going to try to work it out another way. But then Jaime, like an hour later, remembered, didn't she give us a house key? Yes, I did. So they pull out the house key, and now they can take the house key and go to my house, and I can tell them where my spare key is, and they went and got my spare key. And then they went back and got the computer bag out of my car so that no one would break into my car and steal my computer. Like, yay! I mean, that was completely, like, it doesn't have anything to do with I was ill. It was just I was stupid. I was travel stupid. And I needed help to solve that problem because I was already on a plane going away. And so I had given them a key when we moved into this house. And thank God he remembered that I'd given it to him. I can't believe I forgot I gave it to him. I was like, I need to have somebody else needs a key to my house in case I lock myself out, in case whatever. And he was able to take it from his house and go get my computer, go get the car keys, go back and get the computer out. And we solved the problem. And so that was like totally buffoonery recovery. And I had given my key to him, and thank goodness, because. And so if you're in this position, you're unconscious in the hospital because you wrecked the bike, then somebody has to go pick up your car where you left it. And they got to have car keys. And who knows where the hell your car keys are, right? So they're going to have to go find a key, which means they got to get in your house, which means they need a house key. So having somebody nearby, easily accessible, you know, isn't tied up all the time with a key to your house, so that if you have to recuperate from your own goobers, they can help you do it. This is a very important thing to do. One of the things you'll have to have for, if somebody's in the hospital, you're going to have to know they're going through the ER, they're going to start asking you things like, what's the insurance company, what's your primary care physician, yada, yada, yada. And you may or may not be in a position to answer these questions. So if you're not, the person that is your, you know, helper is going to have to do that for you, right? So knowing who your doctors are, having a list of doctors accessible, who are you already working with? And, you know, for me, it's like, I'm not sick. I don't have a lot going on. You know, there's not a whole lot of doctors to call. But I know people that are, you know, they're seeing a cardiologist and they're seeing a, make the list of all the different specialists, right? And they have relationships with all those guys. And all those people need to be in on anything that's going on, right? So I need to be able to call people and say, hey, something's happening. Ed needs to talk to you, yada, yada, right? Having some idea of where the list, like they don't need to know who the doctors are. They need to know where the list of the doctors is, right? So having that be a part of the packet would be really important.
And their medications.
Yes, and their medications. Is that on my list? It's not on my list. It needs to be on my list. Yes. And most people that are taking a lot of meds have a sort of an ongoing medication list that they update. That list needs to be with the doctor so they can get a hold of it. You're exactly right. Because they're going to ask you. They're also going to ask, are you allergic to food or medication? And so you need to be able to answer those questions with some certainty. I'm allergic to bees, but I'm not allergic to food. So, you know, my risk is pretty low if somebody mistakenly gives a wrong answer to that question. But somebody else might be seriously allergic to something. And there's also, you know, there's certain kinds of medicine. People are violently allergic to certain kinds of medicine. And so you really have to know that. And having that be on that piece of paper, here's my medications, here's my food allergies, here's my medical allergies, here's my medicine allergies, so that they know, they can say with certainty, they say, this is the person says this, right? You have to know whether the person that you're covering for, so whoever's going to be you in a crisis, is there a will or a power of attorney? They need the power of attorney if you're injured but not deceased. They need the will if you're deceased. And they need to know where they are. Like, you know, I didn't know where my mother's was. We never found an original in the house. We don't know where her copy was. I still don't know where it is. But we managed to get the lawyer's copy of the will. And so that got us rolling at least and gave my sister the authority to be the executor and do the stuff she needed to do. And so knowing where those documents are and making sure that they exist are really important. For Susan, and helping with Susan, what it meant was I needed to pay hospice people, I needed to pay the electric bill and the rent and that kind of stuff. And you can't get into somebody else's bank account, right? You can't get into their financial assets without permission, and the power of attorney gives you that permission. So the power of attorney is usually written. I give the power of attorney to her now, because I want her to handle my business no matter what's going on with me, or I give her the power of attorney if I am incapacitated. Like you specify that this document doesn't trigger until I'm unconscious in the hospital. And then she gets to have my power of attorney and start doing my stuff. So you do need that legal document, particularly if you're not related, right? So if you are a friend who lives close by who's trying to help, as opposed to the family that lives out of state that isn't coming, you want to be the person needs that power of attorney. They need that legal protection. Yes, ma'am.
There used to be two different types of power of attorneys.
There are.
Medical and legal, right?
Yes. So there's the regular power of attorney that covers, that gives you right to do all sorts of financial records, transact business, pay, move money, buy real estate, do all that kind of stuff under the power. And you can specify what the power can cover and what it doesn't cover. You can define, okay, they can spend my money, but they can't sell my real estate. They can, you know, contract on my behalf or not. You know, you can specify those. And then the medical power is instructions about what to do with your physicalness, basically, what covers if something's wrong with you and somebody's having to make medical decisions in a hospital. Typically, that's going to fall to your legal heirs, unless you have a medical power that specifies somebody else. So, I don't know about you. I'm in a good relationship with my siblings and my parents, but I know people who are not, and they're like, I would no more want my brother to come down here and start paying my bills than, you know, to, you know, ship me off to Borneo, right? Like, it's not something you may not want your family and your business if you're incapacitated. And so if that's your situation, then you need a medical power. You need a regular power of attorney so that somebody can legally get in front of your legal heirs. They can get in front of your crazy sister and your deadbeat dad and your... But you know, whoever has that legal line of succession to you, those legal documents get in the way and let you specify who can do what and when, right? Okay. It is a little bit of money to make those documents happen, but you can go online and, you know, pay for sort of form, standard form size. You do need to do it by state. Each state has a slightly different version. And you can use that forms for pretty low cost. If you have any significant assets, I would go to an attorney and let an attorney make sure that you're covering yourself. And like I said, you can make the power of attorney. They can pay my rent. They can get to my bank account, but they can't get to, you know, you can tie that up however you want, however many bounds around it you want it to be. You just need to give them the capacity to be you legally in order to handle some business while you're unavailable, and you decide how much business they can handle. Tell them who the lawyer is. Whatever you do, however you do it, take the look, give them the card, send it to them in an email, give them the lawyer phone number and name so that they know who to call to trigger the response when all this stuff starts happening. Who's the executor of the will? So when you do a will, you usually do the first executor and then an alternate. Whoever's going to be the alternate, if whatever's going on happens after the first person is unavailable for whatever reason, maybe, you know, when you put them in there, they were in great shape and now they have dementia and they can't be your executor, right? So the first alternative might have to pop into play. Whoever those people are, you want to, A, when you put them in the will, you're going to tell them. B, so those two people have to agree to be the executor and the alternate. And then you want to tell your other friends who they are. Like, when this stuff goes down, she's in charge. And you tell your family, when this goes down, she's in charge, right? So that they know who they have to go through to get to you and your stuff. One of the things that we had to have, we contemplated needing for Susan, was a guardianship document. So as an adult and somebody who's basically diminished capacity, you can become a guardian of them, and then you're sort of legally in charge of them while they're still alive. We didn't get that far because Susan passed away much quicker. So we got the will and we got the power of attorney, but we didn't ever have to invoke the guardianship. But somebody that's ill for a long, long time, and especially like my friend Katie did this for a friend of her mother's. Her mother had long since passed. This is a long, old friend of her mother's from when she was a little girl. She took care of this woman and became the legal guardian because the woman didn't want her kids doing it. And so she needed legal protection for being the person in charge of managing her friend's life. And so anybody that's going to step in that's not related to you is going to have these documents. And if you, the power of attorney lets you conduct business no matter what. The medical power lets you make medical decisions with the doctor. When the doctor says, I need you to decide A or B, you get to say A or B. And then the guardianship covers managing their life for a long-term disability, basically. And then you get to talk to everybody all the time. So much fun. One of the things you should ask is, are there any prepaid funeral or cemetery arrangements? So sometimes people do that stuff, and then, you know, they did it 30 years ago, and everybody's forgotten about it. Nobody in the family remembers it. Nobody has any clue. And there's a paid policy sitting back there at a, sitting at a funeral home somewhere that's going to, when you pass away, it's going to cover all the expenses already. And nobody has to spend any money, except nobody knows it's there. There's no way for the funeral home to know that you passed away. And so there are a lot of unused prepaid funeral home policies out there, and because people forget to tell. Hey, guess what? When I die, go to the cemetery. There's already a plot. I already paid for it. So you got to include that in the information you provide to people. Along that line, if you have a preference about whether you want to be cremated or buried, you need to tell somebody. So how many times have you sat around and be like, well, I don't know whether how they feel about that. It's a conversation that people find twitchy and difficult to have. And mom, do you want to be cremated or buried? Oh, I don't want to talk about that, right? Like, it's a conversation that's difficult. But if you don't have it, you don't know the wishes. So maybe if you can't have the conversation, you can write it down and put it with the documentation. I want to be cremated. No, don't listen to your father. I want to be cremated. Please do that, right? So that you are, get your wishes as you want. A list of assets is super important for the person that's going to be the executor of the will. One of the things that I found out is that my mother had inherited these little pieces of 0.00% of a percent of a oil field in Illinois that she had inherited from my uncle, my great uncle, actually, her uncle. I didn't know there was any oil in Illinois that I had to be worried about. And the only reason we figured it out is because there was these little minuscule deposits in her banking account. I was like, what is this? Where did this come from? We had to back into it. It's like, oh, there's some oil wells. Who knew? Right? So learn from my experience. Don't make people be forensic scientists to figure out what you own. So make a list. Oh yeah, there's some stupid royalties coming from my uncle in my stuff, right? Like that would have really helped. And you can't, I wrote in here, you can't transfer or disperse what you don't know exists. So here's one. Everybody at some point in their life decides that they need a safe in the house, right? And then they can't remember the, she's making the face. She just made the face. Everybody that has a safe has to have the combination, right? Like Ed had to send me the combination to his safe because he kept forgetting what it was. And the little piece of paper that came with the safe, like he couldn't find the little piece of paper and he kept putting it somewhere safe and then he couldn't figure out where it was. And so he sent me a little picture of the little combination to the safe, right? So this is one of those things that needs to be in the list somewhere so that when you go to the attorney and get the stuff, oh, you can open the safe and here's the combination, right?
Or the key.
Or the key, right? Exactly. All that stuff. Like you need what you take for granted to get into things. There needs to be a duplicate accessible when you go find the attorney or the setup, right? Who knows what you stashed in there, right?
It's like storage units. You put things in there and then forget all about them.
And then forget all about them, exactly. And then, you know, some guy on TV goes and wins an auction and gets all your jewelry, right? You don't want that to be true. Credit cards and bank accounts. So you know which credit cards are active and which bank accounts you have open and where they all are. And depending on how much you play with your money and put it in different places, you may know that there's a wide array of bank accounts all over the place that have, you know, $100 here and $200 there, and you've spread it all out and God only knows. And then they go dormant because you're deceased or you're in recovery in the hospital and nobody's paying any attention, and all of a sudden you're getting this letter from the bank. Well, we never heard from you for 3 years, so we escheated it to the state of Texas, right? Make a list of the stuff you own, bank accounts, credit cards, real estate, give them a list to follow. And sure, they could back into it and they could dig through all your paperwork and find all, you know, but don't make them clean your house in order to find the stuff that they need to do the work, right? That's the crisis part of this clutter. If your house is a wreck and you tip over the front of the bike and you're unconscious, don't make it hard for the person to figure out which bills have to be paid and can't go past due. You want to make sure they're still going to have. Here's a good one. What about the ATM password? That's a key to the kingdom, right? And in the short term, you probably won't need to be, somebody won't be needing to get ATM money out of your account. But in the long run, but in the short term, they may need to run and pull money out to handle some business for you or deal with the doctors or whatever. Yes, ma'am.
What about online account passwords? I got 40 of them, I think.
Right, and everybody does. I mean, nobody uses the same password for everything. Or if they do, somebody in their life is yelling at them for doing that. So you're exactly right. If the word password utters your lips, it needs to be on a list somewhere where somebody can find it. And I'm listening to myself because I have a little paper file, a little paper folder thing that has all my passwords in it. And I need to make copies of it and go put it somewhere because God help somebody that has to go into all my accounts. And you know, on that list, you opened that account 15 years ago and you stopped looking at it 10 years ago and who God only knows what has happened, but it's still out there and it still has a password with your name on it. And so if they need to go in and like deactivate and shut things down, they need a list to work from. They need to know how many accounts you have open everywhere, even though you probably don't know where they are. Are there any retirement accounts? Are there any other assets available to cover final expenses? So sometimes people prepay for the funeral, and it's, you know, if you go to the funeral home, there's a policy and it covers. Sometimes people buy insurance to cover that, so you have to know that there's insurance that's, the proceeds are designated to cover the final expenses. Maybe you don't have any of that, and they're looking to see where you have money that can be used to pay to bury you. That's a super important thing. Susan didn't have any of that, and one of her friends donated a cemetery plot in her family plot so that she could be buried. And so we had to pay for the hole to be dug. That was an at-need expense. It was at need to dig the hole. But she already owned the property and she was willing to title it over so that we could bury her, which was lovely. Because she was basically destitute and she didn't have anything. And so this is the kind of stuff that if you don't have anything and they got to come up with cash to handle your business, they need to know that. Like you said, username and passwords for online banking, billing, social media accounts. Facebook very cleverly has come up with they have a new designation in your settings. You can create a legacy contact. So if you pass away, this person has access to your account. So they can go in and edit your page, post on your page, you know, act like they're you on your page, or shut it down, turn it off. And without that, you sort of stay out there for forever. So there was a point where a memory of my mother went by that was from her page, and it freaked my sister out that, you know, several months after she had died, something rolled through the newsfeed that was from Mom, and it really distressed her. So she went in there quickly and shut it down. I was like, oh, all Mom's photos are gone, and we can't go back on the anniversary of her death and talk about her and put memories in and stuff. So we had a little disagreement about how to handle that, but it distressed her to see those. And so if somebody wants to turn your account off, they need to be the legacy contact to be able to go in there and change that. And so I'm going to tell you, across the top where there's your name and there's the home button all in the blue bar up there, and all the way to the right there's a little triangular arrow. And if you click that arrow and go down, you're going to go into settings there. And when you get the settings page up, there's a general box, and you click manage account in the general box. And once you go in there, one of the things is legacy contact, and you can designate the person in Facebook that has right to come and mess with your account and either turn it off or fiddle with it. I guess make notes, change pictures. Like, you can't change the profile picture after somebody's dead because nobody else can get in and access your stuff unless they're this legacy contact. So if you want somebody to go in and make an announcement about you or go on your Facebook page while you're in the hospital and say, she's in the hospital and this is what's going on, they need to be able to get into your account. If they're in the military, you need a DD-214 form, which is the discharge form. And only military people know or care about this. But basically, it's your way to, if your family member's in the military, they're entitled to a free gravestone that is in a particular size, and they can have bronze or granite, and it's a, you know, 24 by 12 or 24 by 14 plaque that has their name and their dates on it, and they can have a couple of emblems like the military service emblem and stuff, and it's free to the vet. So in order to get that benefit for them after they're gone, you have to have the discharge form that says they were honorably discharged. So never had a clue about that until I knew Susan was in the military. It's like, they're supposed to, because I used to be in the cemetery and funeral home business. So I knew that they were she was entitled to a thing, but I didn't know how to get it. And of course I started doing the research. It's like, well, you need the form. I'm like, great. Who knows what a DD-214 form is? Never seen one before. And I had to go digging through a bunch of paper. We did finally find it. It was there. And she had saved it for a whole bunch of reasons, but it's, you know, it's an important document for somebody that's in the military. But we had to go hunting for it. So if your family member or friend is in the military, tell them to find that document and put it with the will so that it's available when you need to have it. Like, it doesn't do them any good until you're trying to get the plaque. But, you know, that's some expense that we would have had to pay for a gravestone out of our own pocket for Susan if not for this benefit, because she was in the military. And so we were able to get a plaque to put on the space, with the free space, and we ended up installing her in. And so that's a good form to have. That's what I'm saying, if you're a military person. Okay. Oh, here's a good one. You need to know the pets, their names, and you need to know who the vet is. Like, if you're in the hospital, somebody needs to suddenly come, like, you don't come home for 12 hours and the cats are starting to eat the furniture, right? Like, somebody's got to go over there. So A, they need your house key. And then B, they need to come over and feed your cats. They need to know who they're looking for and who's missing. And if when Susan passed away, she had 7 pets. And so we had to place 7 pets. Well, in Texas, pets are their property, like your furniture. So whoever inherits your stuff inherits the pets as well. So I had to have, that was one of the things that had to be specified, was the power of attorney, and then the will gave me the right to adopt out the animals. So, and you know, I knew that her family members didn't care about her animals, like it wasn't like there was an issue, but that gave me the legal right to take the animals and go and find them homes and deal with them. So you need to be covered if you have pets, right? That's why you're Margaret's executor for the dog. Because she knows that somebody's got to deal with it and be in charge of it. And, you know, they got to pay for the pet food, they got to have the key to the house. And, you know, there you go. Yes?
And the pet's medications.
Yeah, meds, if that's, you know, whatever you would tell a pet sitter, right? Like, whatever you would have to have a pet sitter cover for you if you're out of town. Assume that you're out of town in the hospital. The pet sitter has to know everything. So that's a good thing to know. Yes?
Well, if it's cats, would you want to know where their litter boxes are?
Yes, you would. You wouldn't want to be having to find it by smell. You're right, because that would be very, very bad. So, yes, all of those things. Somebody needs to know how to handle your animals if you have animals. And, you know, some of us have... If you're in a couple and you're ill, then the spouse takes care of the animal. That's not something you think about. But particularly if you're single or if you're older and you don't, like at some point it gets hard for the spouse even to be taking care of them too, right? So there's going to be some point where you want to transfer that responsibility to somebody else, and they need to have the legal right to do that. So somebody, one of your siblings doesn't come screaming after them, "What did you do with, you know, Cookie the cat?" Yeah, I did what they wanted me to do, and here's the document why. that was the friend that died last week. Her siblings were uninterested in attending her deceasedness. She was in hospice, and they just stayed away. And so the only people that were there were her girlfriends. She had several girlfriends there, so she was not alone the whole time. It was wonderful, but then there was 2 cats. And they had never been anywhere but this house, and they ended up being taken to a no-kill shelter. And, you know, that's something that it's sad. You don't want to think that that's going to happen to your pet. So trying to figure out a solution, like Margaret says, take my dog, find a loving home for her. That's a smart thing to do, so that you don't have to worry. You're not going to run with the dog and go stick him in a shelter, right? And the people that did that, you know, they were her friends, did the best they could. They put a call out. They tried to find a home, and then they took it to a no-kill shelter so that the two cats wouldn't be euthanized because they weren't kittens. You know, they were like nine, and so there was concern that they wouldn't survive to be adopted. But they're in a no-kill shelter, and it's fine. But that's the kind of stuff that happens, and you don't want to be worried about that while you're in the hospital. You don't want your cranky brother to show up and give your cats away because they can't be bothered to take care of them while you're in the hospital for 3 months or whatever. Like, that kind of stuff might happen. I don't know what your relationship is with your family, so you have to evaluate that part for yourself. My sister lives out of state, so one of my friends would have to come. Like, if I was in the hospital, my housemate would be in charge of the cats. She'd have to be feeding them, taking care of them. Well, and I have provision in my will that if I were to wreck the car and die, neither one of us would be able to pay for the house by ourselves. Neither one of us would be able to cover the house expenses alone. And so I have money to transfer to my housemate so that my death doesn't mean she suddenly has to move in 30 days, right? Like, I don't want her life to be exploded because I was stupid to wreck the car. Right? So this is the kind of stuff that you want to think about if you're sharing space, and you want to think about if you're alone and you have, you know, little furry friends that you want to take care of. Okay, I know this is it's a slightly morbid topic. I appreciate you going along for the ride with me about it. It is something that if your paperwork is in chaos, if your house is in chaos, and suddenly there's an emergency, and somebody has to run through your house and find stuff to deal with your life, you don't want it to be hard for them. Even if you can't get your house all uncluttered in a minute, you can go find the important documentation that they need, go hand it to them, or go hand it to an attorney, give them the business card and say, if I wreck the car, go see this guy, right? Go talk to this chick, she has all my stuff, and the extra house key and the extra car key. And then you can be comfortable that somebody else can just go quickly and easily pick up and manage while they're racing to the hospital to find out what happened, you know? It was that way for my stepmother, and it was, you know, everybody was like, oh my God, oh my God, and my dad was really distressed, and then he went home for a couple days, and he's like, I guess I better pay the electric bill. I don't know how to do that. You know, it was in the middle of his distress, he was trying to figure out how to pay the bills, and it was hard. Yes, ma'am.
I feel like I've seen some kind of like a little, and I don't know where, but a workbook where it's like, you know, you fill in a lot of this stuff.
So there, a lot of financial planners provide some version of that.
Okay.
And I know that there's that kind of stuff online everywhere.
Okay.
Right? So any kind of, you can Google that stuff all over the place and find all kinds of lists.
I should drop dead.
Right? Like, you know, what do people need to know? What kind of data do I need to provide? We have this list, and I'm sure that Ed will put a link to it in the video so that you'll be able to click to where we have the list printed out. It's a good starting point, and of course feel free to add anything that you think is pertinent or necessary, but it's a good starting point to gather the data, fill in the form, and go find somebody and make that relationship happen. And consider, you know, when you're 20, you don't think you need a will, you don't think you need power of attorney. Yeah, but you might wreck the bike. And one of your friends may have to come pay your bills and feed your cat, right? So at least get a power of attorney out there, even if you aren't willing to talk about a will. Give somebody the power to come and manage. And, you know, if it's your mom, great. She'll have legal rights. She doesn't need any paperwork. But if you don't want your mom all up in your business, then you need to have a document that says, no, mom, you can go sit in the hospital, but I'm the one that has to go write the checks to make the house, you know, so she doesn't lose her apartment, right? That's all I'm saying. Okay, does anybody else have any questions? I appreciate you guys coming today so much. We're gonna stop, and I will see you next time.